And the hour has arrived. I'll call the meeting of the Agriculture Committee to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, which is posted online. Mr. Smith, would you conduct the roll call?
Mr. Chair, Sundin is present. Representative Vang.
Present.
Vang present. Anderson.
Anderson here.
Anderson present. Burkle.
Present.
Burkle present. Eklund.
Present.
Eklund present. Hansen R.
Hansen R. present.
Hansen R. present. Hansen J.
Hansen J. present.
Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn present. Lippert.
Lippert present.
Lewick.
Lewick present.
Miller.
Present.
Nelson.
Present.
Thompson.
Thompson present.
There he is. All right. Everybody is present. We do have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. The minutes of the last meeting were provided with the meeting material and are posted online. Vice Chair Vang, you've reviewed the minutes, I expect. Can I get a motion?
Yes, I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of January 25th, 2021.
Any questions or corrections on those said minutes? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Okay, the minutes are adopted. Today we're going to get an overview of the governor's budget recommendations for ag that were released yesterday, and then start on our walkthrough of ag-related accounts, programs, and budgets. So first up is an overview of the governor's budget recommendations. It might be helpful if members, well, you have some time built in for questions this morning, since this is an overview, and we're going to get going into more of the details of the budget in coming meetings. It might be best to hold more detailed questions until we get to the appropriate section of the budget work. So the PowerPoint has been sent to members and was posted. Welcome, Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner Tom Peterson and Andrea Vauble.
Mr. Chair, and pleasure to be here today for the Tom Peterson. I'm the director, Commissioner of Agriculture for the Department of Agriculture. Department of Agriculture is our Deputy Commander, Andrea Vauble. I believe we have Commissioner Whitney Place that can answer any questions, as well as Sherry Promschroder, our director of our budget director. Do you have the PowerPoint, Nancy? I'm just going to go through some like real high level things on our budget. Just as we say, we'll be looking as further committees go on a little deeper each section. And then Andrea will go through the recommendations and we'll be glad to take questions. So with that, go ahead to the next slide, Nancy. And just our mission, you know, really hits the core of and I like it. It's our supply, the health of our environment, strength and ag economy, and doing it equitably. Next slide. Just a quick overview, too, keeping in mind that MDA has 496 employees that provide services and impact. We promote farm and food products in local, state, national, and international markets. We respond to disease and pests that threaten agricultural and natural resources. We inspect grocery stores and convenience stores, as well as dairy farms and processing plants. And we regulate feed mills and fertilizer plants, kind of some important pieces there. Next slide. We have two main areas of responsibility. We are the primary state agency responsible for protecting our state supply, a key player in protecting the state's natural resources, partnering with our other agencies. We are also the prime agency responsible for promoting and supporting the state's ag industry. And next slide. We carry our responsibilities out through six main program areas that you'll hear from a lot as the year goes on. The pesticide and fertilizer management division, the ag marketing and development division, where a lot of our grants come from, the plant protection division, which does a lot of everything from Christmas trees to hemp to wolf management, our dairy and meat inspection, which you're probably pretty familiar with, our food and feed safety, and then of course our lab and our all important lab that we have. Next slide, Nancy. Just a quick look at our ag sector in Minnesota, because I think it's important when you think about our ag budget, of the governor's budget that was released yesterday. Our budget's about little less than half of 1% of the state's entire budget. But when you look at Minnesota as a whole in agriculture, we have 68,000 farms across the state. That is down, and that was as of 2019, down from 73,000 in the past 5 year census. Of course, we generate $112 billion of economic activity. And these next two, I think, are really important. $8.85 billion annual crop sector and $7.85 billion livestock sector. Those are really close. A lot of states don't always have that. Our states have, goes back and forth sometimes or is very close on any given year. And it's a nice balance that Minnesota has. Agriculture supports more than 430,000 jobs. And then always good to brag that we're number one in turkeys and sugar beets, and number two in hogs, dry beans, green peas, sweet corn, and number three in soybeans, spring wheat, sunflowers, and oats. Next slide. And so here's a look at our overall base budget that we have. And again, we have the mission there. And then really look into our expenditures. 57% goes towards protection services, 32% goes towards promotion, so that would be grants and things like that too, and other activities that we do. And then we have 11% admin, and you can see the breakdown by divisions there. Next slide. And here's kind of a breakdown of how our expenditures go by fund. You can see there that our biggest is our dedicated fund and our special revenue fund, but it's mostly a dedicated fund, and that's based on fees that we collect, whether it's a pesticide fee or fees that our customers pay or taxpayers in the state of Minnesota. Our general fund makes out about 40% of that. Our federal funds are really important to the agency that we partner with the federal government on for about 12%. And then you can see two other smaller pieces are remediation and legacy funding. Next slide. So here is our base, general fund base. And you can see the different appropriations that we have. We'll start on the right hand side. You can see many of the things we do, whether it's invasive weeds, plant protection, laboratory services, food general fund, retail food. You can kind of look at all those. Cottage food, I know we're going to talk about that a lot in committee, is there on that side. Our state meat inspection, ag marketing, those are the appropriations that we had in our base. So that kind of continues. Our base budget is basically the same if from the 2021 budget on things. We did not cut programs that were in the base for that. We're going to add things to it, and we're pleased that the governor's proposing a 3% increase in our overall base for that. We'll go over that in a minute. But there are a few things I want to highlight on this slide. If you go over to the other side, you can see a pass-through claims for wolf and elk depredation on the left-hand side again. Dairy programs, very important there. Our biggest pot is about 14.5 million or so a year, 14.7 on our Agri program, and that is our pass-through that we do a lot with. And just for newer members of the committee, that Agri program was created years ago. Whether you like ethanol or not, the legislators in the past put at one time $35 million per year, $70 million of biennium into that account to help start our ethanol industry in the state. And they paid that out for a little more than 10 years. But that at one time made up 40% of the department's ag budget. And many people, including myself, when I was in my previous job, worked hard to capture those funds to keep them in the base other value-added grants. So a lot of the things we do are livestock investment grants, our value-added grants, the bio-incentive payments, farm to school, a lot of different things come out of that agri plant, but agri account. But I think it's important too that also we have flexibility and we were able to do some things this year in COVID with that. Important piece to helping Minnesota grow our businesses and farms. The ag REIT portion is also another piece that's very important and a big piece that passes through for positions at the University of Minnesota. We're not proposing any cuts to that. Ag societies and county fairs, also a very pet project of mine, is in many county fairs and enjoy going to county fairs as many of you as you do. It's one of the oldest payments that the state has made is to our ag societies. Melsey Second Harvest is also another big piece. That's combined both for a milk and protein and our farm to food shelf program and our farm advocate program and mental health system. So I just wanted to point out those are still in the base. I will highlight, though, that there that the legislature in the 2021 budget, the House and Senate and the administration, there were several pass-throughs that were one-timed, and so they were not continued in the base. And we do not have them currently in our budget, some of them. And I just want to highlight some of them because I think they're all worthwhile, and they're things that I think legislators, you know, hope can consider carrying bills on or work on in your bill. And those would be the Center for Rural Policy and Development, Green Seam, the Northern Crops Institute, the Turfgrass Council, the Livestock Breeders, which is smaller, and the Minnesota Horticulture Society. Those are things we'll be looking at for our supplemental bill too in February, but we wanted to have a discussion with the committees about those. So next slide. Now I'm going to turn it over to Andrea, our Deputy Commissioner Bobel, to walk through our change items.
Andrea Bobel, please.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk about the budget recommendations for MDA in the governor's COVID-19 recovery budget. So I know that we've got limited time, so I will probably go through them pretty quickly, but feel free to let me know if you have any questions. So first of all, the governor is looking for an investment of $50,000 per year, an ongoing appropriation to fund our current rural mental health outreach programs. That includes our Minnesota Farm and Rural Helpline, which is our professional 24-hour confidential hotline we provide. We also added text and email service to that, and so we really want to keep that going. You also might be familiar with some of the Down on the Farm workshops or some of our suicide prevention seminars we've put on with some of our excellent partners. And we've certainly seen a lot of interest in that we have not been able to meet. So we're hoping to continue that ongoing outreach for rural mental health. And we'd like to make sure we have that ongoing to have some stability in those programs. Next slide. The governor's also looking for a general fund increase of $20,000 each year of the biennium for one more additional farm advocate. So we currently have a contract with 10 farm advocates across the state. It's been a wonderful program that we've had at the department, and they've been assisting farmers for over 20 years. We do feel like we could use an additional farm advocate, particularly in the Southwest area, if we could. In a typical year, farm advocates will assist over 200 farmers and their families, and we really want to make sure that they have all the support they need all around the state. They've been incredibly adaptive to the COVID world with going virtual, and we've been so grateful for them. And so we really want to have some additional support in that program. Next up. Support for farm transition. So many of you might be aware of our FarmLink program. It's a platform that we have which connects retiring farmers and non-farming landowners with beginning and emerging farmers who are seeking land to farm. So we're looking for a one-time investment of $50,000 to really make that platform much more robust. So it's, we heard throughout the year, last year when we were doing, the year before, when we were doing outreach meetings led by Assistant Commissioner Patrice Bailey about emerging farmers and what some of the barriers were folks were facing, we heard a lot about access to land. And so FarmLink, I think, is a really good instrument that we have, but we really need some help beefing it up and making it more user-friendly. So we're hoping for a one-time investment in that program. We also are creating a two-year pilot program that we'd like some investment into. It's $50,000 per year for what we're calling farmland access teams and to contract with farmland access coordinators. So again, as I talked about with just access to farmland, we're looking to model this after our dairy profitability teams, which we've had at the department for a long time. They're customized teams that really help each farmer work one-on-one with some of the folks who need help with legal or financial advice. And we've heard a lot that emerging farmers need some help navigating all the different programs and issues that arise as you emerge into farming. So we wanted to start a pilot program that would allow the department to really help folks navigate as they come into farming. Next slide. We also are looking for an investment in a one-time investment of $100,000 into our international trade program. We have a really strong agricultural sector, as the commissioner mentioned, in Minnesota, but we really need to be looking and maintaining and also opening new markets. And one of those that's critical for our exports is the East Asia market. We found that in-country representation is key to market success, and one of those is Taiwan. We have a great relationship with Taiwan. We've had a number of missions, both inbound and outbound, with Taiwan. They've donated masks to the COVID-19 effort because of the strong relationship we have. But we find ourselves competing usually with other states in getting some of these markets. And so we really would like to have some in-country representation and hoping that this funding would help with that. Our trade team has also been very innovative in doing the virtual trade missions over the last year, and those have gone well, but we do find that being in person and building those relationships is really key, again, to market success. So we're hoping to have some additional dollars to help boost up some of the trade missions we can do when travel starts back up again. Governor's asking for a one-time appropriation of $50,000 in the first year to complete the development of our IT infrastructure for hemp licensing and managing data for our producers and processors. We actually have the application time is open right now until April 30th, so we have people actively applying both to be growers and processors. We also, as you'll see in here, licensees have grown to more than 500 since we started this program in 2016, so it's wildly popular. We're going to be using it to design and develop software to track the sampling and the testing data. And part of this, too, is that we have to work closely with USDA to get our hemp plan approved, and it has been approved. But in order to share this kind of data that's required under our plan with USDA, we need to have this infrastructure upgraded. So that's the reason for this ask. The commissioner likes to say this: we like to battle invasive and noxious weeds. And this is another one that is going to run out as of this next biennium. So we were generously given some dollars, $225,000 each year, to fund our noxious weed program. But it does run out starting next year, and so we're asking to put this into the base. It's been wildly successful in our pursuit to battle Palmer amaranth in particular. The key to this program is it's really a critical partnership we have with local governments. So most of this dollars, it's all of the work we do with local governments for their weed law enforcement, for training. And then we really lead the eradication and management efforts with the local governments and our Noxious Weed Advisory Committee, who've been just essential to this work. We've done so well with some of these things, we really want to keep the momentum going. And so we are asking for an investment to keep the Noxious Weed program going and the work continuing. Next slide. The governor is asking for a one-time investment of $1 million in meat processing. This is a boost to our already existing value-added grant within Agri, the program that the commissioner was talking about. It would go to support the startup expansion and modernization of meat processing across the state. COVID-19 has laid bare a lot of issues around the world, but certainly within the agriculture sector, we've seen the need for meat processing, the small to mid-scale And it was an issue before COVID hit, but certainly we realized the investment that needs to happen to really get what we need out on the landscape for meat processing. We're also asking for an investment of $110,000 in each year of the biennium to help with our meat inspection program. So with the new and expanded amount of meat processing occurring and the ones that we hope to have, that of course means more meat inspections that need to occur. We do, the nice thing about this is we do have a cooperative agreement with USDA Food Safety Inspection Service, FSIS. And so whatever money the state will put in, the feds will match. So an investment of $110,000 will get us $220,000 for this program, which will be really helpful to maintain and then also increase the number of mandated inspections that we need to perform. Next slide. The governor is also asking to dedicate food licensing fees. So right now we have revenue generated from our food handler license and vending machine inspection fees. And as of right now, we get those and they go directly to the general fund. And then we have sort of a middle person that, you know, being the, you know, that it has to kind of get appropriated back to us. So it makes it a little bit unstable for us. It's hard for us to plan long-term about how to adapt to industry changes and how to improve our program services when we're unaware or not sure about what the funding levels are gonna be. So what we're hoping to do is take the currently non-dedicated food handler license fees and put them into a dedicated fund, similar to what we do with some other programs we have at the agency. So that's a request from the governor's budget. Next slide. Back in 2019, the governor initiated the Governor's Council on Biofuels, and what he was asking was how to get the state to meet its petroleum replacement goals. This was really a follow-up to MnDOT's Pathways report, Pathways to Decarbonization of the Transportation Sector, and that report found that biofuels really were a key, amongst other things, to decarbonizing that sector. So the Governor's Council on Biofuels came up with a list of recommendations, and one of them really was aimed at the need to upgrade the infrastructure that's out there so that we're able to ensure that higher blends of biofuels are available all around the state. So the governor is proposing $2 million per year from the general fund through, again, Agri to establish a biofuels infrastructure financial assistance program. And as part of that, we're going to establish, this is a mouthful, Biofuels Infrastructure Financial Assistance Program Advisory Committee to advise the commissioner on eligibility guidelines, program criteria, and how to leverage additional public or private dollars, whether that be from the feds or elsewhere. So we're excited about that one. We also are looking to invest in our bioincentive program, which is also housed in our Agri program. So as of right now, through Agri, we have $3.75 million appropriated to that program each year. We still are seeing that the payments or the requests for payments are greatly exceeding the available funds that we have. So this recommendation for an additional $750,000 per year will get a little bit at that, make some headway in that shortfall. So, but certainly there's more work to do, but the governor would like to make sure that we keep working at that shortfall and invest in this important program. The governor is also recommending a one-time general fund appropriation of $1 million in fiscal year 22 and 23 for our agricultural best management practices or Ag BMP loan program. So the Ag BMP loan program, we like to say it's kind of a sleeper program that does really well. It's really popular with counties particularly. It's an existing revolving loan fund that we just want to be able to increase the lending capacity we have right now. It is a program that provides low interest financing through their local lenders, and it's to farmers and rural landowners that aim to implement best management practices that prevent environmental pollution. It's particularly aimed at water quality, but we certainly are looking at more through a climate lens as well at some of the climate best practices that can be put on the landscape. And so we think this program has been really successful, and we want to be able to have some additional capacity. As I said, it's a really popular with local governments, particularly counties, and the request from those counties has exceeded the available funding by over $20 million. Next slide. The governor is also recommending a one-time general fund appropriation for a pilot program called the Climate Smart Farms Program project. It's $500,000. Many of you are familiar with our Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, which is a federal-state partnership we have with USDA and EPA and private industry. It's really a first-of-its-kind program that looks to address water quality in agricultural areas. But we wanted to take that and expand it a little bit into the climate space. So we wanted to have a climate smart endorsement, but we understand that there's going to be some, you know, we need to help farmers get there. We also know that there's probably going to be some sort of marketplace or payment program in the future, but since we don't have anything now, we really see this as a limited term 5-year bridge payment program to help to be available to those who are certified through our Ag Water Quality Certification Program to obtain the Climate Smart endorsement through implementation of climate change mitigation practices. And next slide. As Tom talked about earlier, we are very proud of our world-class lab. A huge thank you to all of you who supported the bonding bill. We had an appropriation in there to make some much needed upgrades to the building that we do share with the Department of Health. And so we're so grateful for that. Thank you. We are asking for an ongoing general fund increase of $66,000 to our lab division to help finance capital equipment purchases. So generally we have, these really expensive pieces of equipment are about 10 years of life, and we're well beyond 10 years for a number of them. And they're really sensitive, really important equipment we need for things like our microbiology unit, our toxicology and chemistry unit, and our plant analysis unit. So we want to really have those ongoing investments to make sure that we stay on top of those depreciating pieces of equipment. Next slide. The governor is also recommending that we increase the pesticide fee to fund lab and urban programs. So the increase is recommended is that for the pesticide gross sales fee, we would increase the ag pesticides by 0.35% and 0.4% for non-ag pesticides. We think that'll generate about $2.25 million in the ag fund starting in fiscal year 23. Really what we're looking to do is provide a stable source of revenue to replace or add, again, high cost analytical equipment needed for things like water testing. We also really want to get at urban pesticide education and outreach to make sure that pesticides that are being used in urban areas, that folks know how to use them to keep themselves safe and the environment safe as well. This is also a key part, is it in response to an Office of the Legislative Auditor audit, we had a recommendation that we expand our pesticide monitoring program. And to do that, we will need this increase in the fee. And then finally, our operating adjustments. So the governor is recommending a reduction of $1.33 million to the fiscal year 2021 general fund budget. And an additional funding of $565,000 in 2022 and $974,000 in each subsequent year after that. The fiscal year 21 savings were generated mostly to the hiring freeze, the salary savings that were provided through the hiring freeze. We also held back monetary performance awards. We, of course, did no out-of-state travel that reduced the amount of usage of our motor pool fleet. And of course, there's limited printing of marketing materials, just all due to COVID. We do plan on continuing these efficiencies, some of these efficiencies into 22-23, but we hope that this additional funding will make sure that projects that we have had on delay will not be delayed, that we'll maintain a stable balance within our fee accounts and make sure that we can still get out and about with our agency visibility and marketing activities. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Wow, that was quite the presentation. I really appreciate that, Ms. Vauvel. We've got a few minutes for some questions from the committee. Are there any? I've got a hand up with Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the report. And Commissioner Vauvel, you talked about the $2 million additional funding for E15 build-out infrastructure, but I think you also said that money was going to come out of the agri account. So was this actually new money, or is it just a dedication of money already in the agri account?
Commissioner Vauvel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that's a great question. I should have clarified that. This will be in addition to, so it's not the already existing money within agri, it's in addition to that.
Okay.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Peterson, Assistant Commissioner Vauvel. So I'm curious about was pleased to see the additional allocation for the Ag BMP loan program and the Climate Smart Farms endorsement. I'm just curious if you could say more about how you envision allocating those funds. Just what your thoughts are about how those can be most most quickly used, most effectively used.
Mr. Vogel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippert, thank you for the question. I think really we're excited about those two programs for and particularly the Climate Smart one. It will be part of the governor's sort of climate package amongst some of our other sister agencies. But I think we really are looking to just encourage and incentivize anybody who is looking to do some of these practices on their landscape. I think the pilot program, we're still kind of hammering out what that's going to look like. And hopefully, because it's in the pilot stage, we'll learn a lot about how to do it over time. The Ag BMP loan program, we just have tons of requests from counties who are looking to do really great things, both for water quality and climate. So I don't think we'll have much trouble allocating or getting it out in a quick manner once we have it in hand. Did that answer your question?
Thank you, Representative Lippert. Is there a follow-up?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Vogel. Yes, that's helpful. Just helpful context. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lewick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner and Assistant Commissioners. Question on moving or straightening out the dedicated food licensing fee thing. Do you need legislation to make sure that's permanent? I know we've had a history of having real shortfalls and finding enough people to fill those spots over the past 4 or 5 years. I say again, do you need some assistance there on legislation to make sure we get that into a dedicated, somewhat more protected fund?
Commissioner Vogel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, thank you so much for the question. Yes, we would. The legislative assistance would be really helpful to make sure that we can move those dollars from the general fund to the dedicated account, as we talked about, to make sure we have that stability that we refer to.
Thank you. That's all I had, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. We're running up against the clock a little bit, but Representative Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, we're supposed to be looking through a lens of racial equity to try to make sure we're reaching all Minnesotans. And where we have invested significant amounts of money in the past, do you have any demographic or socioeconomic information on who has received the money? And how can we direct new money to reach people who traditionally have not been able to receive that money because of systemic racism and institutional structures that do not allow their participation?
Commissioner Vogel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, fantastic question. Thank you. So one of those things is we're in the midst of working with our Emerging Farmers Working Group, and this is certainly something that's come up and we're actively looking through about, you know, what you measure is what you care about and prioritize. And we don't have good data on how these funds have been spent before, simply because we just haven't collected that information for various reasons, which we're trying to work through. Mostly just because we weren't aware that we could or would be able to. So we're kind of working through that right now. But that is one of the things that we want to be able to measure and work through with our Emerging Farmers Group to really know where these dollars are going and why they aren't getting to where they need to go and what barriers we need to bring down to ensure that it is getting to folks who normally would not have access to those funds. So it's a good question and one that we have in mind and are actively working on.
Any follow-up, Representative Hansen? Hearing none. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question's a pretty simple one. With the dedicated food licensing fees, you didn't say exactly how much money that is that you're asking to be dedicated. Could you just tell me what that dollar amount looks like?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cleburne, thank you. I'll have to double check on that. I think unless somebody on our team has it off the top of their head, I don't have that number with me right now. I think it's about maybe 300,000. Moving from the general fund to dedicated. So it's not new money. It's just moving, but I will get that exact number for you so that you have that. I should have that in hand. Sorry.
Okay. Well, thank you, commissioners. I think that about wraps it up for that presentation today. I appreciate your time and your expertise.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, before we get into passing the budget, okay, here we go. We have our friends from ARI for a presentation for the next 45 minutes or so. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Sundin and members. I'm Dan Scogan, Government Relations Director for the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, or AURI. It's always a pleasure for AURI to come before this committee to talk about the work that we do, how we do it, and who we do it with, because since we were established by the legislature over 30 years ago, we continue to value the close relationship that we have with the House and the Senate and this committee. Today, you'll hear from AURI Executive Director Shannon Schlecht, but also present today will be AURI board member Federico Tripodi. Federico is an investor and an entrepreneur and serves on AURI's board as an at-large member. He will be offering his views on the organization and its contributions to value add and innovations in Minnesota. And to get us started this afternoon, AURI board chairman Ron Obermüller, a soybean farmer from southwestern Minnesota, who represents the commodity group on our board. Ron is our longest serving board member at this time, and we'll have him discuss our mission and how our organization has evolved to remain effective while still meeting its statutory requirements. Shannon Schlecht will be sharing his screen so that we can see some of the slides that we presented today. And Ron, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you.
Mr. Obermüller, please welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Sundin. Thank you, Chair, for letting us tell our story. We've always been proud of the organization, and I like to think we're moving forward and making progress every day. I don't know if you shared the screen yet, but I'll read our mission statement to start with. It's to foster long-term economic benefit for Minnesota through value-added agricultural products. This organization was originally funded and started by the Finance Committee on the state level in the 80s. Our job was to, put it bluntly, was to get rid of commodities, create markets for it, bring more value back, trying to get rid of the surplus at the time. And I think we've moved a lot of commodities over the years, a lot of our unique areas. We work with a lot of entrepreneurs. I guess you talked around the state to people, they keep saying that we're an economic engine for Minnesota. Very proud of the job we do, very proud of the people we have. This organization has turned into a family. Everybody works together. I guess I'm very impressed with how we move forward and what we do. We're very conscious of the funds we spend. Anybody that comes to us, we work with them. We don't go out and pick certain groups. Originally, this organization was set up to do research dollars and be run by farmers. So to a large degree, we've kind of stuck to that. Our charter says that we will have two major commodity groups. So we have a farm bureau representative and a farmers union representative. It's part of the charter is three commodity groups. So we have right now it's soybeans, wheat, and beef on the board. A couple of years ago, we added at large. So we've got two at large, one from Cargill. John, I should be calling out the names as I go through here. I'll go through the list and do it right, I guess, for you guys. I'm chairman. I've been around like the longest. I guess you call me a survivor. Another year of my term will be done. Jerry Hasnettle is from northern Minnesota. He represents his farmers union. Federico Tripoli, he's an entrepreneur. He's probably second year on the board. Ken Asp represents Minnesota wheat as a council seat. Carolyn Olson is an organic farmer and represents Farm Bureau on the board. John Vohaus is an agribusiness. He represents Cargill. Has a lot, work a lot with the hydrogen economy and some of these things with John. Very good. John Schaefer, a lot of you probably have worked with him with the Beef Council. Jeff Grieve is a new board member. We added from the Austin area. He does product marketing stuff for Hormel in that area. Gene Dornick, we're going to get to meet him tomorrow. He was just appointed. Thank you, Mike, for joining our board. We kind of had fun talking to you last Thursday at our board meeting. You know, we're going to rely on you for information, so pay attention. Eric Handicap, we just elected to the board. We're going to probably be meeting her a little bit better at a virtual board meeting also. Does a lot of stuff with organics. She gets into the carbon credit world. We're going to need to sneak into that part of the world to keep moving. One of the mantras we've always kind of used around AURI is we try to see around the corners. So we try to get people we can work with, who we can rely on to help educate us. We see carbon credits in that part of the world, something very important that's coming at us. And it's not that we're going to do a lot with it, probably. We don't have research dollars, but we have the ability to get people together. So if we can get people on the same page, and last thing we want to do is see the farmers left out and not get, you know, the big corporations take the credit for the carbon credits and nothing come back to the farm. So kind of trying to cover a lot of ground, but we've got a lot of good people to get it done.
Thanks, Ron. I think, Mr. Chair, we'll turn it over to Federico Tripodi.
Thank you. Mr. Tripodi.
Mr. Chair, representatives, good afternoon. My name is Federico Tripodi. I've been a board member for the last 2 years at URI, and that has allowed me to learn a lot about the organization. I have worked for my whole career in food and agricultural technology, the last 20 years in the Midwest. And I moved from Missouri to Minnesota 5 years ago to be the CEO of a publicly traded company in the food and ag tech space here in Minneapolis. Today, in addition to being a board member at AURI, I own a plant-based protein company, and I am an investor and an entrepreneur, as Dan and Ron shared. I believe, in my perspective, it's somewhat unique, having seen a URI in action for the last few years, and comparing that to my experience working in agricultural ecosystems across the world. I truly believe a URI is a competitive advantage to our state. Over the past 30 years, a URI has proven to be a muscle for our state, where we can stretch to develop our value-added agriculture with a very unique economic development objective in mind. AURI has research and commercialization capabilities, and it's been important for us to partner with the legislature, the Department of Agriculture, and other state agencies, and many, many countless organizations across our state to ensure that our rural economy and agricultural ecosystems stays at the cutting edge of profitability for our state. I believe that our mission is even more important now amid the many challenges that agricultural and rural ecosystems are likely to face in the coming 2 years. And Shannon and the organization have demonstrated in the past year a continued ability to adapt to a very changing environment, as we have all lived through, and to be very judicious in the management of the resources that we are allocated to maximize the impact in our economic and development. So I appreciate the time today, and I think you will hear a lot of great things about how Shannon has made sure we allocate the resources judicially and maximize impact. And the Secretary and Treasurer, I'm very happy with how the organization is doing just that.
Thank you, Federico. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to our Executive Director, Shannon Schlecht.
Thank you, Mr. Scogan. Shannon Schlecht, please.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's my pleasure to provide an overview of the activities that ARI has undertaken and to advance the agricultural opportunities for the state of Minnesota. Just first of all, we really work on the post-harvest side of the ledger. So everything on the demand creation, utilization of the crops that are being produced here across the state. And we bucket those into four big areas. And I think that helps keep us on mission in terms of what our goal is as an organization in terms of creating that utilization and those new opportunities. And those are bio-based products, which is really around replacing petroleum ingredients into the various products that can be created using the agricultural crops that we grow here. Co-products, which are those secondary processing streams to put those into new uses. Food, obviously, is a pretty straightforward one. And then renewable energy that's being created from the crops that we are producing here within the state. And we just do that from an organizational structure standpoint with our staff that we have on board. And we have 31 full and part-time staff at ARI currently, and they are scattered throughout the entire state. We have our corporate office in Crookston, Minnesota, and then we have a very large footprint in Marshall with laboratory and technical capabilities with our meat and food lab there, our bio-based renewable energy lab, our analytical chemistry lab, as well as our product evaluation and sensory lab, which just opened up last year. So that is where a lot of activity occurs from that standpoint. And then we have a co-products laboratory, which is really more of a pilot facility or a dirty lab, you could call it, in terms of working and creating with densification and dewatering and those different aspects. And then we do keep a physical footprint at the University of Minnesota St. Paul office as well. So we've got four footprints covering the state, and then about a third of our staff are virtual to get out and have those conversations and meetings and to cover as much territory as possible for the organization. And as you look at this is a 10-year history, looking at the House districts and Senate districts of where we've had client activities. So that's client activities are just one segment of our work. And you can see that even though we're right in certain locations, we cover a lot of territory as an organization. And probably not a big surprise that a lot of our work is in the larger agricultural producing areas, but we still see interest and innovative ideas coming out from across the state. And have had activities in almost every corner of Minnesota. We're trying to advance a food and agricultural innovation idea. And we do those across our major program areas. And I'll just go through these so you have an understanding of some of the work or how we approach our work as an organization. I'd say our bread and butter is really commercialization services. And that is that hands-on experience that we work with producers and entrepreneurs, businesses across the state to provide business development and feasibility analysis, those connections to resources and referrals, and then doing that hands-on side-by-side work with them in terms of going into our laboratory or having our scientific staff work on their products that they're shipping into our laboratories to really advance that product and process opportunity. And then we do public initiatives where we're looking, as Ron mentioned, seeing around corners around what are new areas that we need to help de-risk as an organization that might be an opportunity for the agricultural industry. So that's really that applied research and development of trying to create new resources, new information for our agricultural industry to utilize. And we've launched a new program a few years ago called the Ag Innovation Partnership Program. And that is a cost share program with other entities that is really, again, focused around creating public education and research reports that we can share with industry where there's some shared interest or collaborative interest in advancing an opportunity. And then we do our industry convenings. I think we all know that there is benefit in pulling together different segments of the ecosystem or the value chain, getting those connections in place to help accelerate ideas. Those have obviously changed during the year. From physical events to virtual events, but a very important part of the work that we do in terms of sharing that information and getting entrepreneurs and producers and others connected to those that might be beneficial to advancing their ideas to the marketplace. And then we do research programs where we are looking for gaps and trying to create products from Minnesota commodities that we think fill some gaps in the marketplace. And that's been a fun new program. We're very innovative looking in terms of what more can we do to create utilization opportunities for our products and then get those out to businesses that can really take advantage of them. And then finally, we have an entrepreneur in residence program, which is, I think, again, a pretty unique offering that ARI can provide to our producers and to our entrepreneurial ecosystem where often a high hurdle is to have access to lab space and equipment, and we have the ability to open up our laboratories to share that equipment, to get those proof of concept ideas over those first hurdles and get them moved into the commercial marketplace. So with those programs, we definitely keep busy as an organization. You can see here that we opened up 116 projects over the 12-month fiscal year for fiscal year 20. We worked on 183 projects because a lot of our projects don't fit nicely into 1 year, and they sometimes can be longer term. So we have those open that we're constantly trying to move forward as well. But we're also action-oriented and trying to move those projects forward. So you can see we closed 97 of them. And then you can see a little bit there in terms of how we split out our hours. And when we say multi-area, which you see in the orange is a large segment, that just means that it covers more than one focus area. And as we look at some of the innovations that come across our plate, they often might touch one or two areas, which in terms of what entrepreneurs and innovators are trying to do, where they don't fit nicely into just one bucket or into four walls. And then we also do our Connects events. And you can see we still managed to do 14 ARI Connects events during the fiscal year. A lot of those in the food space, which has a lot of energy and activity here, but then trying to create those opportunities across our other focus areas as well to continue to advance them. So 610 participants overall, and we continue to get, I'd say, good showing of new participants at our events as well that are getting exposed to these opportunities and to what ARI might be able to provide to them as a resource. And next, I'll just dig into a little bit of what we're doing in each of the focus areas to give you a little bit more flavor of the activity. So in food, we have a really vibrant food ecosystem here within Minnesota. And there's a lot of demand that we're seeing from food entrepreneurs that really want to create a product that they've been thinking about and just don't know how to go about doing it in an efficient manner. So we see a lot of diversity in clients, right? A lot of them that don't have a food science background or that basic understanding. And that's where we can really shine in terms of providing them free educational tools that we create, such as our shelf life guide that we conducted. It's one of the questions that we often get in terms of how long can my product be on the shelf, a clean label guide, local ingredient sourcing, so trying to connect them to our Minnesota producers. A packaging guide as well, which is essential for being in the commercial marketplace. And then our technical assistants, we have two food scientists on staff and a business development director that has a lot of experience in the food industry. And these are the basic asks that we often get from our food entrepreneurs. So nutrition facts, labels to be able to sell commercially, product evaluation, product development and process development. And of course, referring them into our agriculture production community as well when they're looking for new ingredients and resources. And then we do convenings here as well. One of our longer term convenings has been an industry thought leader group in the food area. And that just is a great opportunity to connect our legacy companies with our entrepreneurial community and our commodity groups as well in terms of different areas that we can explore and see if there's opportunity to accelerate some opportunities for specific commodities or in specific areas. And just a few examples here, a halal and kosher meat market study that we did in cooperation with the Department of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota, looking at there's some niche opportunities there for meat or the livestock segment to look into. What are some bottlenecks of moving into this market area? Smoothies brand, who was our Egg Innovator of the Year a few years ago, that has really grown their business around sunflowers. And then the amazing chickpea as we look at plant proteins and just what they're doing in terms of not just doing spreads like a peanut butter replacement, but actually incorporating that into new ingredients. And then a group like Hoyo, which is working with the Somali population on tamarind sauce and their sambusas and how we can provide just insight and the technical resources that they need in terms of advancing their business. If we look at co-products, this has been a growing area for us. Really, a lot of companies looking at how do they reduce their waste streams or that they're sending to a landfill. And we just see, again, a lot of interest in improving their sustainability footprints. And this covers a wide range of technical assistance for our team down in Waseca, from dewatering, to drying, to densification, all those things that make it more economical to transport these products that might be higher in moisture as they're coming out of a processing stream. We've got the new hemp decorticator, thanks to the bonding dollars that were provided a few years ago, that can help advance our fiber opportunities in the hemp space. We're doing a lot more oilseed pressing on new and novel oilseeds that are being developed and looking at what are some end-use applications there. And then again, the regular product and process development. And a lot of interest in animal feeds that come through our co-products channel as well that we're seeing. And I'll mention those on the next slide. And then we did start a new thought leader group here as well because we're seeing such demand. And the ability again to connect our Minnesota businesses and look at ways that we can collaborate and move ideas together. So this was a food and egg processing waste thought leader group that has formed and meets on a regular basis to talk about opportunities and best practices. So as we look at some of our examples here, Milk Specialties Global was our Egg Innovator of the Year last year. They are a large supplier of dairy food ingredients as well as dairy products and food products as well. We've helped them help with some feed formulations and rumen bypass formulations that we're able to do with our research equipment we have to really benefit the dairy industry. A company like Purus that's very active in the protein isolation and concentrate stage. What can we do with the residues that result from that processing? Can we help create some new opportunities? A group like Net Zero that is working on separation of egg waste into higher value opportunities. And then this group here called the Chia Feed Pets. And this is a pretty unique business out of Rochester where Fundamental Feeds really looked at what's missing in the equine industry in terms of diet, and can we create a new product for that? And they've had great success, and we worked with them in creating these products that are now going around the nation and around the world using several plant-based ingredients that we can provide. And then as we look at renewable energy, a pretty challenging environment from where we were several years ago. I'm looking at new opportunities. I think ethanol and biodiesel, we can continue to service. Looking at new innovative renewable energy has been a little bit more challenging. That said, we do work on micro projects that look at using egg residues for biomass heating, for example, and different operations. Anaerobic digestion is getting a lot more interest. We're also exploring the hydrogen economy in terms of what is the agricultural industry's opportunity as we look at the hydrogen bioeconomy. And then we have our ARI Connects events here again as well in terms of really digging in on anaerobic digestion and then advancing the renewable energy roundtable that we've been doing since 2006 to look at what are new ways that we can assist in the renewable energy efforts where Minnesota has been such a great leader. And then as we look at bio-based, this again continues to be a growing area of interest. I think there's just a lot of interest in removing plastic as well as in circular economies. We've seen our project load here grow since my time at ARI, and we're doing more life cycle assessments to look at what is the footprint, feasibility analysis on new ideas, again, that technical insight that our team can provide. And last year we did organize a Green Build webinar under our Connects program, which is really looking at how do we use more agricultural bioproducts in the construction industry. And that was a really fascinating discussion around some of the opportunities that may exist there as companies look at greener buildings and opportunities. And just a couple examples here, New Starch Solutions, which is creating a starch-based packaging material that we've been working with on business development and technical assistance. The slide there as well on the highways is a continuation of our work on bio-based road sealants that we've been doing for several years and advancing that and de-risking that to potential users as they want to take a look at alternatives for road maintenance. And then our hemp report, which was released, which we've been working closely with several organizations, including the Department of Agriculture, to really advance the opportunities for growing a hemp industry here in Minnesota. So that's a little bit of what we've done in terms of some of our programs and projects in those focus areas. And what does that all lead to as an organization? So we look very closely at not just our action, but our impact when we're developing programs and providing service. And we survey our clients at the end of our projects and continuing into the future to see how did we assist them? Did we really move the needle in terms of creating opportunities for the agricultural industry? You can see here that over the last 5 years, We helped create or retain 606 jobs, according to input from our clients, help them de-risk that investment of new capital of $128 million. I'm quite proud of this next one, that we helped increase new gross sales of $322 million a year. So when you look at our allocation from the state, that's an 82-to-1 return in terms of how we're providing new economic activity for the ag industry. And then you can see here some future-looking estimates as well that our clients have provided to us. And we also asked them to give us some qualitative input as well. And these are just, again, some examples of their service expectations and how we met them in terms of what they came to us for, and did we really help move the needle again in terms of advancing an opportunity for the ag industry. So you can see here business growth, success, connections, improvements, and needs in terms of some other ways that we're providing that service to producers, entrepreneurs, businesses here across the state to really create some new opportunities. And as we look at what else does ARI do in terms of advancing some opportunities, I really think collaborating and partnerships are such a critical component of what ARI brings to the table, and a little bit harder to quantify, but so important for a healthy ecosystem to advance and to really grow some of these opportunities for the ag industry. So these are just a handful of the collaborations and partnerships that we've had over the past year, where we've worked together with others that have programs that we saw as beneficial, fitting our mission, and really thinking about how can we leverage those partners and again, just create that impact that we're all looking for. So Embold is one where we're partnering and leading some activities with several other organizations here across the state to advance missionaries that fit for us. The Ag Innovation Campus, which is the new opportunity up in Crookston, that you've undoubtedly heard about, where we are looking at being a synergistic partner and are a founding member of that effort as well. We've done a lot of project activity with the University of Minnesota and with the Department of Agriculture as well to move opportunities forward, assisting on grants with the Minnesota Beef Council, the Wheat Council, and as well as the Soybean Council, and then just providing mentorship and judging opportunities to some of these other activities that are going on throughout the state. And I should mention the Ag Innovation Showcase as well, because that was a great example of creating a relationship, showcasing what was going on here, and talking that organization into moving their 400-person conference from St. Louis to Minnesota, because they really liked what they saw here from an ecosystem standpoint. And just the activity and energy that adds to what's already going on here, I thought was a great addition to what we can help in terms of developing new ecosystem opportunities. And then we also look for, you know, what are some timely areas that we can shed some light on. And one of them here was a COVID-19 survey, which just based on our ability to have those connections and networks, and then through collaboration with the Department of Agriculture, AgriGrowth, Breeding Team, and the University of Minnesota, we could quickly get a survey out, compile information, reach a wide network and breadth of Minnesota ag and food processors across the state, and really get a good idea in terms of some of the challenges and ideas on programs and activities that we might want to undertake in the near future to really assist the industry to help them overcome some of those short-term challenges that they've been facing. And I think that was a very valuable collaboration and really provided some helpful insight to advance some ideas for future collaboration and opportunities as well. And then I'll just mention that there's no shortage of innovative ideas that we're seeing as an organization. This is a handful of I'd say, requests and questions that we get from businesses and clients and producers around the state around what more can we be doing or how can you help us in these different areas. Industrial hemp, right, we can continue to see a lot of interest in more in the fiber and the bio-based opportunities there. This food and health area is really intriguing in terms of functional foods and the digestibility and just that linking, again, of what we eat back to our overall health. And is there more that we can be doing here as a leader in both food and medicine here within the state of Minnesota? Protein is just an active area, both from a livestock and plant protein, as well as a little bit into the alternative protein space. And I've already mentioned several of the other areas that we're digging into. Aquaculture being a newer one, where we're seeing just a lot of interest in that space and ways that we can help de-risk and again, help move that opportunity forward. So with that, I'll just turn to financials here for us as an organization. You can see for fiscal year 20, we had roughly a $5 million budget on our revenue side. Of course, 3.9 of that coming from the state through appropriation. And we highly value that partnership and that funding that really allows us to enter into a lot of other activities and to leverage those dollars to advancing. I think you recall a few years ago, we implemented a fee-for-service program as well as one of the recommendations from the OL Office of Legislative Auditor. That's been moving forward really well in terms of how we work with clients and where they have some sort of a fee that they're paying as well to access our services. We've been really active going after grants that fit our mission. Finding those right grants that fit our mission is a bit of a challenge, but we're getting much better at that. And I think finding some new federal opportunities as well. And then we do have our royalties and sponsorships for different events that we're growing and advancing as our awareness and opportunities continue to grow there. And then you can see just from an expense standpoint, where we're spending our dollars, programs and services is really executing those programs. Program support is the part of the organization that really allows us to execute those programs. Operations are our rent, insurance premiums, some of those other unique expenses that we have as an entity just based on how we operate. And then institutional advancement is our strategy development, our communications, and some of the PR work that we're doing there. You can see for this past year, we did have a net gain there of $333,000. I'll add that $270,000 of that went right back into assets. So really our net gain in terms of cash was about $60,000. But we previous year, we did have a net loss. So they do balance out at the end of the day as well. Probably our biggest change, just as most organizations, and was mentioned earlier, travel expenses really reduced. Overall, and we were able to save several dollars in different categories there. And then I'll just disclose that this is a great state for innovation. This is just a short map of all of the different activities that we've had as an organization in our 30 year of existence across the state of Minnesota. So you can see it's a lot of innovative minds and ideas that exist out there. And this isn't possible without your support and your partnership and collaboration. And with that, I'll turn it over to just Chairman Obermuller or Director Tripodi, if they have any final comments as well before we open up for questions.
Thank you, Shannon. I did a very good job. You can see we're busy. We're a nonprofit, so we do the best we can to make good investments of the people's money. Not sure where else to go from this, Shannon. Pretty cool. What do you got for thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, representatives, I am amazed every time I hear Shannon speak by the breadth of the work that this organization can do. And what's behind the scenes is the partnership with a large number of entrepreneurs and small companies that are seeking to grow their sales and generate employment, with other organizations, many of which you saw in these slides, and with some of the largest Minnesota-based food and agricultural companies. And what's unique about AURI is that combination of that commercialization capability with on-the-ground research physical assets distributed across our state in the geographies where the innovation and where the growth needs to be happening. And that's quite unique to have that in an organization in a state like this. So as Shannon was speaking, I was thinking, if I had to write a formula, I'm a numbers person. If I had to write a formula for AURI, it would be something like the ability to connect the dots towards innovation. We have all these resources in our ecosystem, but they're spread out and they're difficult to identify for most. A strong capacity of partnership, and then that research capability. And when you put all that together, it's a unique capacity to have impact and create economic development and give us return on investment. So I, on behalf of all the board, I do want to appreciate all the support, financial and otherwise, that the state continues to give us. And thank you in advance for that as we enter these conversations.
Thank you. Mr. Scogan, Anything further for the program?
Nothing from me, Chair, just to entertain any questions that the members might have.
Terrific. To the committee members, any questions to the testifiers? Ginny Cleaborn, Representative Cleaborn, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is really simple. In the food space, so I saw the number of projects that you have worked on and how many projects have been completed. But I'm just curious how many of those projects actually became products that are now available on the marketplace in the food space.
Who would like to take that one?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Cleaborn. So I can't give you an exact number in terms of how many are on the marketplace, but most of our food clients and entrepreneurs that we work with are either working right through a farmer's market to have them present there, or working through some type of retail presence overall. So when I look at, like, for example, the amazing chickpea that I mentioned on the slide there, they are in several co-ops and in grocery stores. When I look at smoothies, they're into Coburn's, and they just got into Cub and are active on e-commerce as well. And I think that's another interesting change that we've seen for food entrepreneurs is you don't necessarily have to get into a store shelf. There's a lot of e-commerce opportunity for these clients as well. And that is one area that we've really been working to increase their knowledge and awareness around how do you navigate that aspect of as well in terms of direct-to-consumer opportunities that maybe weren't as available several years ago.
Thank you, Mr. Schleck. Is there a follow-up? Representative Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about how do you guys select clients? What I understand is that they just, clients who want service, they just pay a fee and then and that's how it goes. And then do you guys see opportunities of growth in working with ethnic markets?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vang. So in terms of us selecting clients, we talk to anyone who's referred to us and anyone that reaches out to us in terms of what can we provide to them. So a typical process for us would be to have a conversation with our business development director, and that we do that right just free of charge to see what are they looking for, and is there an opportunity for us to provide a service. I can guarantee that they will not go away empty-handed from that conversation. We'll either refer them into another resource that we're aware of, or we will scope out a project with them jointly to help meet their objectives. And often if it's a new client, we start out, I would say, small in terms of setting some key objectives and milestones where we work with them to overcome that. And that, I think, is a good way for us to approach those clients because it gives us a way to get to know them and for them to get to know us in terms of capabilities and sets of milestones as we go forward with them. So that is how we approach clients. I can't give you the exact number offhand, but we talk with a lot more businesses in the food space specifically that don't turn into projects because we're able to assist them without it needing to open anything with their needs. So we provide that service as well to get them going in the right direction. In terms of your second question on ethnic opportunities, we are actively working looking at diversity, underserved communities in terms of what we can do further with serving entrepreneurs in that space. I think food is such a unique area because food is culture. And we're just seeing a lot of interest in new food opportunities. So we work with some of the tribal communities, for example. I know we've worked with the different ethnic communities here as well in terms of trying to look at opportunities to scope our projects. And we're also connecting underserved communities to other resources that we know that have the ability to advance and to move their ideas forward to the commercial marketplace. So it definitely is a greater interest area for us and focus. And that came out of the OLA recommendations as well. that we had from a few years ago in terms of what are we doing more. Before, we weren't even tracking those types of numbers, and now we're much more, I'd say, just focused, right, in terms of what can we do to benefit those underserved communities with our services.
Thank you, Mr. Schleck. Does anything further, Representative Vang?
Oh, I just want to thank you for that, and I look forward for the continued partnership and how we could continue to expand into different markets too as well.
Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Schlecht. I recall back a couple of years ago when you kind of instituted that fee for services. And just to clarify on your financials, the funds raised under that portion, is that just for clients out of state, or do you charge that also to clients in state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, so we do charge fees to all clients that we serve. The unique aspect is for anyone in Minnesota, we subsidize those rates. So if they are below $250,000 in sales, they only charge 20% of our cost. And it's a minimum of $250 to receive about 15 hours of work overall. So a very low threshold to help get some of those ideas moving forward. Up to $5 million, we charge 33% of our cost. And then over $5 million is a 50-50 split. And anyone that's made the $100 million mark or more, they pay our full cost rate for being a Minnesota business. And then any entity outside of the state of Minnesota, we charge greater than our full cost rate just to make sure that we're being judicial about not spending taxpayer dollars elsewhere. So they do receive a higher fee rate than what a Minnesota company would be paying for our services. Does that, hope that answers your question?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any further questions, comments from the committee? Okay, hearing none. I'd really like to thank all the testifiers today. It's just been a great session, very informative. We'll be unpacking a lot of this information as we go through the year in committee. And next week, we'll be looking at our ag budget and a program review for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. So thank you, and we'll see you all next week.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.